تعبدي لا ندخل فيه. واحد يقول ليش ما نصوم الا شهر رمضان؟ ليش ما نصوم شهرين؟ ولا نصوم نصف شهر رمضان ونصف اخر في وقت ثاني؟ هذا امر ايضا ما لنا ان نخوض فيه. كذلك ايضا الكفارات، من حلف على يمين فرأى خيرا منها فليأتي الذي هو خير وليكفر عن يمينه. كم يكفر عن يمينه؟ اطعام 10 مساكين او كسوتهم او تحرير الرقبة، فمن لم يجد فصيام 3 ايام. واحد يقول لك ليش ما يصوم 5 ايام، واحد يقول لك ليش ما يصوم 2 يوم. هذه مسألة تعبدية ما ندخل فيها نحن. اذا هناك اشياء تعبدية لا نخوض فيها، وهناك اشياء معقولة المعنى. هذه الامور المعقولة في معناها الامام ابن القيم استاذ ومرب وعالم جليل وجهبذ من الجهابذة في معرفة هذه الأسرار، فظهر ذلك على كتاباته، وظهر ذلك على الأبحاث التي عالجها في كتبه رحمه الله.
The fourth feature the Sheikh mentioned about Ibn al-Qayyim's writings, that he would always look for the hidden wisdoms behind legislation. And in his books, in his book like A'lam al-Waqi'in, he would explain and refute the shubha or the doubts, misconception of those people who would deny qiyas and say that qiyas is not from Islam. The Shaykh said that whenever a scholar becomes more firm in his knowledge, more deep in his understanding, the more he understands and becomes aware of the secrets or the wisdoms behind legislation. And so he understands the wisdom behind why certain things are prescribed. And this helps him in defending the religion. It helps him in defending the Sharia from inside and from outside. And again, the Shaykh mentioned a number of his books in which he does so, in which he refutes the people who want to harm Islam from outside, the Jews and the Christians, and also those groups of Muslims or those groups and sects from Islam that try to harm Islam from within. And so this strength of mind and this deep understanding of Islam and understanding of the way its legislation is and the hikmah or the wisdom behind legislation helped him understand and refute these people and these groups. The Shaykh said that many of the masail, many of the issues regarding Islam, the issues in which we can intellectually understand why they are so. And when a servant worships Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knowing why exactly he's worshipping him, why this legislation has been put forward, this increases him in iman. It increases him in certainty. It makes him more content with the Sharia. Just as Ibrahim alayhi salam, as Allah mentioned in the Quran, he asked Allah, oh Allah, how do you give life to the dead? And then Allah replied, do you not believe? He said, certainly, but I wish to have contentment in my heart. So we don't say that Ibrahim alayhi salam had some kind of doubt in his iman, but rather Ibrahim alayhi salam was asking, believed in that which every common person believes in, every common Muslim believes, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives life to the dead. But what Ibrahim wanted was that seeing that thing, seeing that how this works, how it happens, to give him greater certainty and iman. And so Islam doesn't bring together two opposites, nor does it distinguish between two things that are similar. And this is a mistake. This is this mistake, which is believing or thinking that Islam can gather together two things that are opposite, or it makes a distinction between two things that are similar, is a mistake that some of the different schools of the past made. And he gave the example of the school of the Zahiriyya, that school which basically would take the evidences upon its apparent, the way they look apparently, without looking into the proper meaning or the deep meaning of those texts. So they would look at the opinions, they would look at the Quran and the Sunnah just the way they apparently would look, without looking for the hikam, or without looking deeper into the meanings of these texts. An example of that is the hadith where the Prophet ﷺ said that the virgin when she gets married, the Prophet said the virgin is asked her opinion, or her permission is sought, and her permission is her remaining silent. And a virgin by her nature is always shy, and so the Prophet said that her permission that she's happy or she is willing to go forward in this marriage is that she is quiet. So what one of these people from this school that would only look at text from their apparent meaning said was that if this virgin were to remain quiet, then this is acceptable from her. But if, for example, she were to say, yes, I want to get married to this person, then this isn't acceptable and we don't marry her. Rather, she has to stay quiet. So here we find that this scholar Ibn Hazm was making the mistake of not looking deeply at the wisdom or the reasons why the certain laws or certain legislation was made. Another example of this is the Hadith al-Barra in Abi Dawood, in which a man, he married his mother. He married his mother, and then when the Prophet ﷺ learnt about this, he sent... A man, he married his father's wife. And when the Prophet ﷺ learnt about this, he sent two companions and ordered them to kill him and to split up his wealth into five parts and distribute it. And on this hadith again, Ibn Hazm states that if a person were to marry his wife or his sister, then we wouldn't kill him. If a person were to marry his mother, then we wouldn't kill him. So here we find Ibn Hazm making a distinction between two things that are similar. Just that it's forbidden for a person to marry his father, it's the wife of his father. It's also haram for a person to marry his mother. This is illustrating how the Sharia, it hasn't come with bringing two opposite rules together, neither has it come by making a distinction between two laws that are similar. Ibn al-Qayyim, in the way he would research issues, was not like this. Rather, he would try and look at the deep understanding of issues, looking at the hikam, the wisdom behind which certain legislation was made. And even though a person, a believer, it's enough for him to know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made legislation, or the Prophet ﷺ has said something, it's enough for him to believe that and to follow that. But when a person understands why a certain issue or why a certain law has been given, this increases him in knowledge, it increases him in his certainty, and it increases him in his iman in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so there are two types of legislation that we have in the Sharia. One type is which are ta'abbud, they are worship, pure worship. Like, for example, the number of raka'ah in dhuhr. So for example, we don't ask why is dhuhr four raka'at and not six. Or for example, we don't say why is it the month of Ramadan that we fast, why don't we fast half of the month. These issues are pure legislation regarding to worship, which there's no place for the mind or the intellect. So in understanding the hikmah behind them. But other issues which we can fathom from our intellect, that we can understand why certain things are such, then it's permissible to exert an effort into understanding why this legislation was such. And with regard to these types of legislation, these types of laws, Ibn al-Qayyim was really the master or a great pioneer in understanding and showing the wisdoms or the secrets behind certain legislations.
أن الترجمة بالنسبة لإمام الحرمين الغزالي ذكرت أنهما تابع ولم تذكر أن تابتهما لم تكن من جميع الأوجب قلت أنك نسيت هذا الترجمة صحيح أنا من الدارين
تدخل في الأخير
لا بينها لا
طيب previously I mentioned something brother saying that I mentioned that Imam al-Haramain and al-Ghazali that they followed a deviated path in applying the intellects over and above the nusus. But later in their lives, they came back and they made tawbah from their statements. The brother wished to point out that what the sheikh said was that although they made tawbah, they didn't make tawbah from all of the things that they were found to be mistaken in. And there were still certain issues where those two imams were mistaken in, which they didn't make tawbah from.
بقيت أيضا بعض المسائل التي يتصف بها منهج الإمام ابن القيم رحمه الله فمن ذلك جاذبية أسلوبه وحسن بيانه وقوته في عرض ما يريد بلسان طلق وبعبارة جزلة تأخذ لب القارئ. وقد كان الإمام ابن القيم رحمه الله مشهورا بهذا، حتى شهد بذلك أعداؤه، شهد بذلك التقي السبكي وهو علي بن عبد الكافي أبو الحسن تقي الدين السبكي، وهو أشعري ويحارب هذه المدرسة السلفية، ومع ذلك شهد لابن القيم بهذا الفضل، فقال ابن القيم رجل أوتي فضل الكلام. فالإمام ابن القيم له أسلوبه الخاص المتميز في عرضه للمسائل الذي يجذب القارئ، وله العبارات الجزلة القوية، ويتخلل في ذلك من دعائه لله وابتهال إليه والتضرع إلى الله عز وجل بأن يهديه رشده وأن يقبل منه عمله إلى غير ذلك. ويظهر أيضا من منهجه رحمه الله حسن الترتيب، فترتيبه عظيم وسياقه للمسائل وراء بعضها البعض، وبناؤه للمسألة على الأخرى، وعرضه لأقوال العلماء، كل هذا يدل على حسن ترتيبه رحمة الله عليه. أيضا الإمام ابن القيم رحمه الله يظهر في كتبه أنه يكرر بعض المباحث، يبحث المسألة في كتاب ويبحثها أيضا بنحوه في كتاب آخر، والتكرار ليس عيبا، إذا كان في التكرار زيادة إيضاح فليس بعيب، إذا كان في التكرار إزالة لللبس فليس بعيب، إذا كان التكرار فيه توضيح لجزئية من جزئيات المسألة في باب وتوضيح جزئية أخرى في موضع آخر لا عيب. فالقرآن ذكر سيرة موسى وقصة موسى في أكثر من سورة، وذكر قصة قوم عاد وقوم صالح إلى غير ذلك أكثر من مرة في أكثر من موضع، وفي كل مرة فيها زيادة بيان وتوضيح لمسألة وعلاج قضية من القضايا أو جزئية من جزئيات القصة. التكرار إنما يكون عيبا إذا كان عن غفلة، وإذا كان عن سهو، وإذا كان عن ذهول يكون التكرار عيبا في هذه الحالة، وإذا كان خاليا من الفائدة يكون أيضا مملا، إذا كان التكرار خاليا من الفائدة يكون مملا. أما كتابات الإمام ابن القيم فسالمة من هذه المآخذ ومن هذه الإرادات. وعندنا مثلا كما ذكر الشيخ بكر أبو زيد حفظه الله تعالى، وكما نبهته قبل ذلك أن أكثر هذه المادة مأخوذة من كتابه، عندنا صحيح البخاري الذي فيه تكرار لبعض مواضع الأحاديث، فإني أذكر أني وقفت على حديث في 36 موضعا، الإمام البخاري يقطعه ويكرره، وفي كل باب يكرره تحت ترجمة معينة وتحت فائدة إسنادية أو فقهية. فالتكرار إذا كان لفائدة فلا يعد عيبا. هذا يعني ما ذكره الشيخ بكر أبو زيد حفظه الله في خصائص منهج الإمام ابن القيم رحمه الله في التأليف والتصنيف.
The Sheikh mentioned another point about the way in which Ibn al-Qayyim would author his books, and that was the beauty in which he would explain issues and the strength of his argument and reasoning and his choice of words and usloobs, different ways of speaking and writing, which would captivate the mind of the reader. And this is something that even his enemies bore witness to, like As-Subki, who was an Ash'ari, who was an enemy of the Salafi Dawah. He said about Ibn al-Qayyim that he has given beautiful speech, he has been given the beauty of speech, meaning he is able to express himself clearly, beautifully. And also something that is apparent in the way in which Ibn al-Qayyim would write, with the beautiful order in which he would write issues about. He's choosing the proper order in which he would discuss issues, and how we would base certain arguments upon other arguments and certain issues upon other issues. Another point that Shaykh mentioned was that sometimes you find that Ibn al-Qayyim, he repeats certain discussions or certain topics in different and various books. And this isn't to be considered to be a fault or looked down upon. If this repeating of issues or repeating of studies of certain masail has benefit, either benefit in removing some doubts or misconceptions, or some added information, or explaining certain issues that were perhaps unexplained. And this is something that we find isn't particular to Ibn al-Qayyim, but even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself, he mentions certain stories and he repeats them often, like the story of Musa, and the story of Ad, and the story of Salih, and the story of so many of the prophets of Allah. He mentions them more than one time in different parts of the Quran for particular reasons and for particular benefits. Sometimes explaining them or speaking about them in general, other times in detail or specifically, sometimes for a specific reason or specific purpose. And also, the Shaykh mentioned that Imam al-Bukhari rahimahullah would also adopt this method of writing. And he himself said that, "I came across a hadith in which Imam Bukhari mentioned more than 36 times in his book As-Sahih, 36 different times under different chapter headings for different reasons." So repeating oneself or repeating one's discussions isn't considered to be wrong in any way. If there is some benefit or some further explanation that is derived from this type of repetition. As for repetition that is done by way of forgetfulness or heedlessness, then this isn't something that is praiseworthy. And Ibn al-Qayyim's works are free from this type of repetitiveness. This is what the Shaykh wanted to mention about the methodology of Ibn al-Qayyim in regard to his writings. And he mentioned that this is mostly taken from the book by Bakr Abu Zayd about Ibn al-Qayyim and his life.